Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast of board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 294, BGG Hotness for October 2020. We'd like to thank all of our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. All right, everyone out there, we got a brand new episode for you. It is super hot, and Anthony's bringing it to you. Of course, Board Game Geek's Hotness for October 2020. Anthony, why is this list so hot this time of year?
Well, in a normal year, this would be about 2 to 3 weeks before Essen. So we would have a big monster list of 900 games to go through. And you and I would wonder when we could ever possibly actually get these games because we can't go to Germany. This year, it's kind of the same thing. There's a giant monster list on BGG of about 400 games, not quite 900. And we go through it and we wonder when we can get these games. So it's... But this time, we're with everybody. The Germans, the French, the Europeans, all of our European friends out there, we're all in the same boat. Nobody knows when we can get these games. It's great. We're all in it together. So last month, we went through that list the first time, and I think we did about 20 or 25 games or so. We've kind of gone back through and checked all the things that have been added or updated, and we have about another 15 or 20 or so games that are also now on the hotness that are also coming out this fall that we're going to kind of add as an update. So consider this your Essen preview part two, but there is no Essen. So BGG hotness preview part two.
The revenge. I don't.
Exactly.
So we'll be getting to that on our feature review. Obviously, even if we can't have the games in our hand, we can fantasize that we actually were able to get the games, able to get them to the table, and have enjoyed them a great deal. Nonetheless, we will collect them in our collective memory and enjoy them while we'll deal with the sadness of actually not having them in hand. But we'll get to our feature review, so hold on for that. Anthony will be describing in great detail all these wondrous games eventually that will get to the table. All right, so that's what's going on with the board gaming industry. Let's talk about what's going on with BGA. Anthony, there is a little bit of a live stream later today, correct?
Later today, sir. Yes, sir. 8:30 tonight, Eastern Standard Time. We have BGA Live, episode 5. Nice. That rhymes.
Nice.
The game doesn't rhyme, though. Clans of Caledonia. Ive. I don't know. So this week we're back in a little bit medium heavier games and we're going to be talking about Clans of Caledonia. So if you have ever wanted to play the game or interested in it, or just want to see us riff on this thing, join us tonight, 8:30. We're going to be talking about it. If you're listening to this after the fact and you missed the live stream, you can check it out on Board Game Arena's Twitch channel or on their YouTube channel as well. All the replays go up there. So, check it out. We're going to be talking all about this game. I've played this game about 75 times this year, mostly on Board Game Arena. So I have a lot to say.
Nice. So as Anthony said, join us tonight. And if you can't, there's a rebroadcast on Board Game Arena on Twitch. If you haven't tried out Twitch, definitely check it out. If no other reason that you get to get more board gaming to the table, especially by subscribing to our Twitch stream on Board Game Arena and checking out the videos there. A lot more content out there. And again, thanks for our Patreon backers for making that possible. All right, Anthony, so that's what's going on with the board game industry and BGA Live. Let's talk about what's going on with our listeners. What's our question of the week?
Question of the week this week, we're at talking spooky games because Halloween is coming up. We have, like everything else in 2020, a strange Halloween on the way because Halloween is about trick-or-treating and parties and going out, and you can't really do any of that responsibly this year. So while I'm sure there are plenty of people who are going to do all those things anyways, you probably shouldn't. So what better way to counter that, though, than to stay home and play some board games with your family or anybody who might be in your quarantine bubble? And so we asked everybody what games they will be playing this year and basically what kind of spooky do you like? You know, kitty spooky, super spooky, gross spooky. There's lots of stuff. So lots of good answers here. Of course, everybody loves Halloween. They love Halloween games. It's probably the one holiday that has the most games for it just because it gets that whole horror genre to itself. Dave our buddy David said Touch of Evil would be his choice, though he never seems to have the time to actually play it. But one day he'll start this tradition and play it at Halloween. So that's a fantastic game, which is very, very Halloweenish, like B-movie Halloweenish. Chris mentions Fury of Dracula, Horrified, and Abomination as his big three for this year. Those are actually the three I played last year, just the 2-3 weeks before Halloween, so that's pretty funny. Of the three, I think Horrified was the only one I actually enjoyed and have kept around, but I know that all three of those are very popular this time of year. Brian mentions Nemesis with creepy space sounds. So this is basically Alien, the board game. So perfect, right? Martin mentions Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition. Looks forward to playing this time of year every year. And also is looking forward to getting Cthulhu Death May Die to the table. As it's pretty spooky in its own right.
Sure, sure.
Jesse mentions Dead of Winter as well, as one that wants to get to the table. And then as a filler, Campy Creatures, which is kind of a little bit lighter, simpler game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun one. Several people mentioned Mysterium. We had some mentions for Gloom, which I'm not a huge fan of myself, but I could see that being a good fit this time of year. Betrayal at House on the Hill and all of its many versions. Sorcerer, the kind of deck building or card crafty type of game, with some smash up elements to it. So, yeah, I'm not big on horror games. None of these, you know, for a long time, there was nothing that really jumped out at me. I think Horrified is probably the one that's has entered my rotation, and I'll bring it out every year because the kids enjoy it. It's pretty family friendly. You get to play with all the old Universal movie monsters, which I love, and production's pretty solid. So what about you? Any horror games hitting the table?
Well, if I had my Halloween dream come true, if that's such a thing, I would walk up to a house and get a super big copy with all the expansions from Kingdom Death Monster. But since that's probably not going to happen this year, maybe next year, but not going to happen this year, then typically what I do like to get to the table is Mysterium. I think that's, you know, it's a good family weight as far as the game's concerned. It's not too horrifying, but it's a little spooky, especially if you're the person giving out the clues of how certain people are murdered in certain places. I guess if I was going to play something that was really kind of horrifying, so to speak, I guess the one game that really kind of, you know, surprised me was Arkham Horror, the card game. In particular, not that its design or its creatures or its monstrous situations were really horrifying, but the fact that the game didn't end with, like, wiping out the creatures between stories. It was like, all right, you accomplished this, and then, of course, you have to make decisions. And you make decisions, and no matter what decision you make, it's kind of horrifying. So you go on with these psychological, horrific scars as you move forward with the game, as you make choices between a bad choice and a worse choice, if there is such a thing in that game. So I'm like, oh, all right, well, that's really a significant twist. I thought we got out of the, you know, the darkness there, but nope, it's following us. So yay? So, yeah, I think that's the game that kind of stood out above and beyond as far as, like, the truly creepy elements of a horror game that never seems to end.
Yeah, yeah, that's a fantastic game, and that's a really good choice. I could definitely see myself playing that one this year as well.
All right, now on to the games that we want to hit the table. Let's get on to our acquisition disorders. All right, Anthony, what do you have up for us this week?
All right, so one of my favorite movies from childhood, and one that I've been, like, trying to just incept into the minds of my children, is The Princess Bride. I've seen this movie probably 100 times. It was the movie that the teachers would always bring in to show us, like, in sixth grade, middle school, like, family-friendly enough, but also interesting enough to keep everybody engaged, you know, like, on those half-days or holidays. And every now and then someone will say, hey, we're making a Princess Bride game, and I'm like, oh, cool. And then you find out, no, it's bad. And you know, it happens occasionally that IPs get bad games. This particular IP has gotten a lot of bad games in a short period of time, and it sucks.
It's inconceivable.
Yes, I knew you were gonna do it.
thanks.
So when this one popped up, the Princess Bride adventure book game, I was understandably not interested. And yet, I saw some Twitter posts on this on a thread, and I wish I could remember who posted it, but I want to thank them anyways, because the game actually looks pretty good. This is from Ravensburger. It's not from, honestly, I don't remember who had this before. I think it's Game Salute, maybe. But whatever line of just half-baked games that came out like 3-4 years ago, this is not part of that.
Yep.
New thing. Ravensburger's done a pretty good job. You know, they had like that Disney, the Villains game, Villainous. They did a good job with that and some of the other IP stuff they've worked on. So this is a storybook style game, and it's not really like Stuff Fable storybook, but it does have like a little book with multiple different boards in it. I think there's 6 chapters, and you're going to go through, it's a cooperative game, and try to defeat various challenges in each of these chapters that you will recognize from the scenes of the movie. But it's super meta too. Like, you're not just trying to defeat these things. You're not just the characters in the book. You're kind of telling the story, and you're trying to do it in a way that's interesting to the grandson. So if you've seen the movie, the original, you know, you have the grandson there who's sick, and he doesn't really want to hear the story at first because there's kissing, and eventually he gets really into it. But, you know, the grandfather has to really like weave his way through and make sure the kid is actually interested in it. And this kind of takes that idea and makes it part of the game, which is really cool, because it's not just like, let's play through the story of the Princess Bride, which is very charming and well presented, but also fairly rote, you know, it follows a lot of cliches in the genre. It just does it really well. So the way it's described and the way that you end up doing this, it sounds really interesting. So you have different story-based conditions, of course, you have to get through, then kind of like this meta boss character in the form of the grandson who can interrupt and mess up the story and cause you to lose the game, because if he gets disinterested enough or off base enough, he doesn't want to hear anymore, right? So
nice.
I'm pretty interested in this. It sounds really cool. My daughter really likes the movie. She's watched it a couple times now. My son is still very much Fred Savage in the bed, like too much kissing in the first 5 minutes, but yeah. We're going to get him eventually, because he just needs to stick around for like at least 10 more minutes and he'll see like the entire rest of the movie is an adventure, man. Come on.
It's true.
So anyways, that's the Princess Bride adventure book game. It's coming from Ravensburger, so I imagine it's coming to Target, because all these games tend to. Probably going to track it down once it comes out.
All right. Yeah, no, that sounds great. As you mentioned, it's an interesting take on the game. I remember when, as you mentioned, Game Salute had the license and they mentioned they were going to produce a large number of games from this. And I was like, okay, but what about, you know, thematically, the Princess Bride is not about like one particular scenario or the other in the movie. It's about this storybook kind of situation, like you mentioned, that it's not just about the story, but imparting that knowledge and that experience and that wonderment and awe that you can have in childhood and what a story really brings to you. And I guess finally we have a game that does that, because the other ones, not so much on that.
Right? Yeah, it's like right on the nose. And I don't know if it's too much on the nose, but I'm still interested. The designer, too, he worked on Betrayal Legacy, which is apparently, by all accounts, a really good legacy game that kind of updates and modernizes and does cool things with the Betrayal formula. I don't like Betrayal, so I'm not going to play that, but this sounds cool.
Yeah, I think this hits the right thematic game feel that we're really probably been looking for a long time, and the artwork is quite good here. This is not screen grabs, but you do get nice little miniatures, so that's always really cute. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this as well. All right, so a Kickstarter that recently backed by the time you're listening to this is Untamed Feral Factions, the Spirit Strike Edition. It's a shuffle building card battling game that has 12 unique animal factions, plus some extra Kickstarter stuff. And as the title states, it also has a new Spirit Strike expansion. This is a two-player game in which you'll be fighting an opponent and trying to knock out their base using this shuffle deck-building mechanic. So think pretty much like when you've played Smash Up, where you take two factions, you mash them up, and then you're able to actually attack the different bases. The gameplay here is pretty standard. The whole idea is that you have a base of operations, and then you are trying to knock out the other base. And you do that by playing cards on the field. And basically what you're doing is, again, like Smash Up, you're putting cards out there that have certain values as far as attack and defense. In addition, it uses some mechanics from Epic PvP, where you're going to be playing certain cards, but also building a deck of kind of currency that's going to allow you to play those cards out. And there's going to be a separate deck that's going to allow you, like a discard pile, that's going to allow you to be able to activate special abilities. So why this game, right? We have Smash Up, we have Epic PvP, and yet, again, this is another game that's going to be where you're attacking some other base, and you're using characters. Again, this could be Keyforge, this could be a lot of games like that out there. For two reasons. First, the artwork here is pretty wonderful. In addition to just being able to smash together three different factions, the animal anthropomorphic look here is actually quite good, quite interesting. The graphic design is pretty straightforward. Nothing too flashy there, but it makes a lot of sense as far as the game goes. And the price is fairly cheap. So if you do not have one of these types of games and have wanted to get into this whole kind of two-player attack genre, looking for something with some really interesting dynamic artwork, looking at for something that has a really good price point to it. And honestly, what I really love about games so much is the multitudes of combinations, especially special abilities that come to the game. So there are deer, snakes, crocodiles, foxes, pandas, rabbits, raccoons, rhinos, rats, tigers, chameleons, and spirit owl cards. So it really has a little bit of everything. The deluxe edition has foil cards, which just kind of perk the game up a little bit. But nonetheless, this is going to be more or less your standard throw together a team, attack the other player, special abilities abound, build up your currency, build up your special abilities for your special attacks. Again, a fairly good price for this game. It's on Kickstarter. There'll be a late backer pledge if you're interested in it, or you can also pick up the base game. It's already out. This is primarily for the expansion. That's Untamed Feral Factions Spirit Strike Edition.
That's a long title.
Yeah, I don't know why they went that way.
I always wanted to get into these like shuffle building type of games, but honestly, none of them have really done it for me yet. So
sure.
I like anytime there's a new one, I'm like, I'm going to try it because maybe this is the one, and I just haven't gotten
yeah.
it. So I will try this. Yeah, maybe it's the one. I don't know.
I think the artwork here is something that kind of like makes it pop a little bit more than the normal kind of like shuffle random things together and attack each other. I mean, there's a lot of games out there like that. So this is nothing relatively new. I mean, I really enjoy Epic PvP because you do get to smash together a particular class and race. Here, you get to do that, but with three different factions. So again, it's another one of these kind of really interesting, fun to look at, kind of imagine the different combinations that come together when you play these types of games. All right, so that's everything that we want hit the table. Let's talk about the games that did hit the table, and we'll let you know if those games are a buy and you should run out and pick those games up, if those are games are a play and you should sit down and play them, if those games are a dodge and you should avoid them, or if those games are in fact the dreaded burn. So if somebody does not give you tricks, you give them if someone does not give you treats, you give them this trick. All right, Anthony, so what do you have up for us this week?
All right, yeah. I got a new one in from Cosmos called Aqualyn. They sent along a review copy, and I got a chance to play it with my children and my wife, and it's a relatively quick, simple two-player game. So just kind of quickly give a rundown on the rules. You have a single board in the middle of the table, and it's, I don't know, it's like the size of a patchwork board. It's very small. It's a little grid. And on your turn, you're going to take one of six face-up tiles and place it somewhere on that grid, wherever. Doesn't matter. It's up to you. Each of the tiles represents several different types of sea creature, and each of those sea creatures is a different color. And so what you do is one player is trying to create groups of sea creatures, and the other player trying to create groups of like-colored tiles. And you're going to score at the end of the game based on those two things. So if I'm playing the sea creature side and you're playing the colored tile side, you would want like the largest possible groups of red and pink and blue and yellow and green. whereas I want them to be the largest groups of like seahorses and crabs or squid or whatever. On your turn, you can both place a tile and move a tile. So you can move any tile as far as you want horizontally or direction or vertically until it hits something else, either the end of the board or another tile. So not only are you placing tiles and trying to build your own little sets, but you're moving stuff around and messing with the other player. So it's highly, highly interactive, bit of an abstract game, but not like a static abstract game. Whereas a lot of abstract games, you put something on the board, you leave it there, and you try to maneuver around what your opponent's doing. This one, you can move whatever you want, including the tile your opponent just put down. So it is a lot of fun. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. It takes like 15, 20 minutes to play. You play out every tile. And I imagine as you get to play it more, like I've played it three times now, you're going to know how many of each tile there are. I mean, you could just look it up too, but you're going to remember, you're going to get better at understanding like the volume that, like, oh, there's five stars out there already. This is the last one, for example. Like, you might be limited in the number of different like starfish you can pull out. So it is a fun take on the quick two-player abstract game. Perfect weight for the nine-year-old. My five-year-old, though, she got it. She had fun with it. It was a little hard, like, trying to dissect the two, like, between the color and the shapes. But she enjoyed it and wanted to play it again right away. So, yeah, as far as two-player games go, this one's solid. It's just a good, solid play. If you're looking for something with, like, an aquatic theme that's pretty accessible, very, very quick and easy to teach, and highly replayable, Aqualand's pretty good. The only thing I'll say is, and I'm not colorblind, so I don't know, but the tiles, like half the game is being able to match together and work with the colors. So I guess check first. Like, if you are colorblind or would be playing with someone who is, just take a look at some pictures and make sure that you can differentiate the shades. But otherwise, yeah, solid game and a recommendation. Check it out. Aqualid.
Nice. Cosmo really does a great job with these small games. They're a great price and really a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think this one's $20, so it's perfect for what it is. And they're like the nice Bakelite Azul type of tiles. They're like, they're solid.
Sweet. Yeah, like this. All right, I have a game in that similar weight and area. It's called Builder, B-I-L-D-E-R. It's a board game with wooden blocks. This was a recent Kickstarter-backed game. And basically what we're looking at here in some respects is charades, but using really cute little interesting wooden blocks in order to portray what is particularly on your what cards. So basically what you're going to be given is a what card that's going to have two possibilities on it. And from those two possibilities, you're going to pick one of the options. Each of the options has a different subject heading. So you might get something that is actually more of an object, or you might get something that is an event. So basically the idea here is that what you're going to do is give some information about what you're going to be building. And then obviously other players are going to be guessing that particular construction that you put together. And as I mentioned, B-I-L-D-E-R, Builder in this case, each of the what cards has a different subject area based on that letter, and you're trying to collect all of the letters. If you do, by the end of the game, you get three additional points. All other players, and including yourself, if you happen to be the one who gets all the points, you get one additional point for every card that you collect as the game goes on. The person who's actually building the construction is going to also be able to collect points based on the how cards. So how are you actually going to construct that particular building, and, you know, in what manner or what little tricky way. So they're going to have things such as you have to make sound effects while building. While building, you have to mention the color and material of all pieces used. Maybe you have to hum a tune while building. Maybe you have to say warmer or colder while people guess. You know, you have to use a lot of different kind of wacky different things, or not being able to use certain pieces, or being forced to use other pieces. So there's a little challenge for you as far as building the construction is concerned, which I like, because typically when you do these kind of charade kind of games, the harder you work, it doesn't necessarily provide you a point. Now, you can ignore the how condition and just go ahead and be able to get those. There are also challenge how cards, which are actually a lot more challenging, a lot more difficult as the game goes on. Like, you have to build with all of the pieces, or you get 30 seconds to spell out a five-letter word. So there are some additional challenges for the adults in the group if you want to make things a little bit harder. The game takes about 45 minutes to play, quicker if you're playing all adults, longer if you're playing with families. And it, you know, it backed on Kickstarter. And the challenge with that happened to be was, while it did back, it did not back and allow it to meet all its stretch goals. So you do get a very large, beautifully pink coral kind of box that has some really nice graphic design on it, but it's huge. And because it didn't back with all of its extra bits, all the extra wooden blocks, including one of the Kickstarter backer levels where you could actually double the blocks in the box, you're actually getting a game that fits probably about a third of the box. So you get this nice huge box with this really cute artwork on it, and the game itself is a handful of blocks and the cards. Now, I like the blocks. They're nice and smooth. They're, you know, your traditional wood blocks, nice and light, so kids can play them. No worry about anything as far as the game's concerned. You obviously can also play this. There's a print and play for this game, so if you want to print out the what cards and the who cards, and if you have a whole bunch of blocks, you can obviously put this together yourself. But again, a relatively nice game. Random blocks, sometimes they're pretty straight as far as circles, squares, and random kind of pieces. Mostly meeples and just some things that are a little obvious as far as like, hey, that's a car, or hey, that's fire, and other stuff that's just like, okay, that's a shape. So for Builder, it gets a play. I wish it had a lot more pieces, honestly, a lot more abstract pieces that would kind of challenge you a little bit more as you put things together. Most of the pieces are meant to kind of be placed together to make certain things. So for example, there are two pieces that you're able to put together that obviously makes a tree. Now, again, this is really meant for family weight. This is meant for kids. This is meant for, you know, something quick and easy to get to the table. So if you do have that family situation, if you are looking for a very light game, if you enjoy putting together random blocks, Builder might be a game for you. All right, so that's everything that hit our table this week. Now on to our feature review. So for our feature review this week, we are taking a look at Board Game Geek's hotness list for October 2020. With Essen right around the corner, a lot of new games hit. Let's talk about them, Anthony. So what do you have up for us this week?
All right, so we're going to kick it off with a game that actually came out last year. So just going way back. This game actually never came out in the U.S., and it's from Cosmodrome Games, who did Smartphone Inc. So I was already interested in the game, but I don't think Arcane Wonders has actually released it yet. That's called Aquatica. So Aquatica is a little bit lighter than Smartphone Inc. It's a like light, medium weight game, engine building game. You're laying down cards that have different types of actions on them. You combine them together and you're trying to build chains and basically just combo your way through the game. It's that kind of game. Seems really nice and simple, like less than an hour, that kind of weighted game. There's an expansion coming out this year that would have released at Essen. And I think the original game is supposed to be released here in the States as well from Arcane Wonders. And since this is the second game from the guys who did Smartphone Inc., which is fantastic, it shot its way into my top 100 this last year, I'm very much looking forward to this. So it's very pretty to look at, some beautiful ocean artwork, and some mechanics that sound interesting. So that one has been on the hotness for a while, but I think it's on there now because new version coming.
Nice.
Cloud Age, we talked about a couple weeks ago. This is the new Alex Pfister game, working with Arno Steinwender. It's coming from Capstone Games, and so it's up for pre-order already. And we don't know a ton about it. It's got some deck building. It's got some bag building. I say deck building. It's kind of in the middle there. But it's an engine building kind of game, resource management. And really what makes it stand out to me, at least, is the theme is not a typical Pfister game with the stodgy people in the Caribbean or Mediterranean. So that alone makes it interesting. It's a little bit lighter than some of his more recent games. They claim it plays in about an hour and a half, so we'll see if that's true. But very much looking forward to it because, yeah, Pfister. All of his games are good. Even if they're not great, they're all good.
Agreed.
Venice. This is the new game in the Braincrack series of city games. So they did Ragusa last year, which was a fantastic game. Kind of under the radar, but just a beautiful Kickstarter. Very solid game. It takes less than an hour to play, but a lot of meaty, weighty decisions in there. Venice is from Andre Novak and David Turchi of David Turchi fame. And this was on Kickstarter, I think the beginning of this year, the end of last year. And in it, you are moving your boats through Venice along the canals. So you're going to be picking up assistants and dropping them off. They're going to be taking various actions and you're trying to like, it's not quite a programming game, but you definitely have to think ahead in terms of where you're going and how you're going to get there. And build these different routes, pick up things, drop them off. There's some resource management and trading, but it's in that 60 to 90 minute wait, very accessible Euro category. And just, again, beautiful artwork. So Venice is supposed to be done and ready, at least in Europe, here in the next month or so. Hopefully those Kickstarter copies are shipping soon as well. All right, next one up is the new one from Friedman Freeze. It's Fayum. This is, it's got like a Greek, or a Greek. It's got an Egyptian pharaoh on the cover. And it, of course, the game starts with an F because it's a Friedman Freeze game. And the thing that stands out about this game to me is that you are going to be getting new cards, putting them into your hand throughout the game. And these are going to allow you to do various things. But as you discard the cards, they're going to go into your deck in a certain order, and then you're going to play them back in reverse order. So it's one of those, like, as you play the cards in there, they need to stay that way. And this is something that Freeze has been playing with in a few other lighter games of late, especially like his little light box, like Flea and Finished and Fast Forward. But taking that mechanic and kind of blowing it out into a full like economic Euro, which they're listing at 2 hours, so it's probably closer to 2 to 3. I'm actually very interested in this. And I don't feel like I've been interested in Friedman Freeze, at least on a heavy game, in a long time. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how this works out. So, yeah, in Paleo, you are playing cooperatively. You're trying to keep the human beings in their cave alive, but you're also completing various missions. So you might need new furs. You might need to get a tent. You might need to complete a painting that will be on the wall for thousands of years. And so humans someday can look at it and be like, hey, they had mammoths. So I'm not a huge cooperative game kind of guy, but this has like some Euro pedigree to it. And the artwork is really nice. So I'm interested to see if it works out. All right. So next up, we have Monster Expedition. This is a new game from Alexander Pfister. It is a light to medium weight game, only like 30 minutes, super quick. But the reason this one seems so cool, other than being a Pfister game, is that it is in the same universe as the Carnival of Monsters, which was a Richard Garfield game that came out last year from Amigo. So what it looks like is they're building a shared universe of light to medium weight families type of games. And that's just cool. I don't know if it's going to work. It's just cool that they're doing it. This is like a dice rolling game. Fairly simple. It looks like you're just going to be trying to like go through and get these different supply camps and get your wilderness display figured out. Doesn't look super complex mechanically, and the game is supposed to be relatively quick and family friendly, but it's a Pfister game. I don't think there's been any of his games that haven't really stuck with me in a while.
Sure.
And I like the idea of it being in that same universe. And Carnival of Monsters was pretty good. So
yeah.
Next up is Sidereal Confluence Remastered. This is from WizKids, and it's a remastered, which just means I'm not 100% sure what it means. I think there's some tweaks to the rules. And from what I've heard and seen, the original version of this game was relatively ugly, and the components were pretty bad. So this game has built up quite the cult following. It is a 4 to 9 player trading and negotiation game, like pure economic trading and negotiation game. So if you just take the trading and negotiating part of like Twilight Imperium, that's not even the best example, but a game like that, a big long game like that, yeah, that's what this is. And those I've spoken to who have played it absolutely love it. I've not played it, so I can't say one way or the other. It's like 4 to 5 hours long. You need like 5 or 6 people at a minimum. And the components were garbage. So they're like, here's a better version. WizKids doesn't promote any of their stuff. So we'll see what happens with this, if any promotion or marketing gets done. But already it's kind of a cult hit. So we'll see how many people are interested in the upgrade.
Yeah, 2 years later.
Right.
I think that's the fastest second edition I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, if the first edition's ugly enough,
yeah,
do something. All right, next up is Monasterium. This is a new game from DLP Games, designed by Arve de Fuller. It is a game in which you are building a monastery. And it's kind of got it looks like very generic Euro-y, just in terms of the artwork and the layout. But for some of us, that's good, right? DLP Games puts out a lot of good stuff. They were the originators of games like Orleans. And in this, you're going to be doing various different things, you know, completing different special missions to help build like stained glass windows to make the school more famous. Just, you know, monastery stuff. The game is for 2 to 4 players. It's a 2-sided board, so you can kind of adjust based on player count. And if nothing else, I'm interested to hear if it's any good, because it looks cool. I like the look of the board. I always like that theme of just building something up that's relatively, you know, historically inert at this point. Like, it's just kind of a curiosity. So we'll see how this one goes. Next up is an expansion, Gugong Panjun. This was actually on Kickstarter about a year ago, and it is the big box expansion for Andreas Stedding's Gugong, which is a game that grew on me quite a bit. I think my original review was like a very soft play, and over the year and a half that it's been out, I've played it many more times and really come to enjoy it quite a bit. So we talked about this a little while ago, but just a refresher, the expansion comes with 4 modules. You have the Summer Palace, so you'll travel there. It's where the emperor goes in the summer. So there's extra servants and jade and some extra services you can pick up. The Peasant's Revolt, which seems like an interesting kind of spin on the game. The Palace Stairs, so this kind of changes up the envoy situation in the middle of the board, which currently is like the lamest part of the game that nobody wants to do. And then new decrees, new gift cards and stuff that they always call that stuff a module, but really just chuck it all in the box. So I'm excited for this. I know it's in the United States for Kickstarter backers, and it just kind of got stuck in limbo with the fulfillment company. So hopefully it shows up soon. Next up is Schotten Totten 2. Schotten Totten, or Battle Line, as it is sometimes known, is Reiner Knizia's very famous 2-player game in which you lay cards out in a rows in front of you and kind of try to balance out against your opponent and win the most locations. This one is Schotten Totten was always like, I find it funnier because it's like the silly, goofy artwork, whereas Battle Line is like just straight up, Roman legions. But this version is going to add some twists to that. So this time you have an attacker who's trying to breach through the walls of the defender. And so you're trying to build forces into formations at the different locations in the battlefield, which is normal. But then some tweaks to that based on who's the defender and who's the attacker and which cards are going to come out. So Schotten Totten's good. Excited to see how they mix it up. All right, next up is Cubitos. This is a weird looking game. I don't even really know what I'm looking at. If you haven't seen the cover, it is what looks like a block of cheese wearing lederhosen on top of a mountain. So it's kind of like a SpongeBob look, but I'm pretty sure it's cheese. And those are probably human legs. So yeah, I don't know. It's an image you can't unsee. Let's just put it that way. But the reason this is interesting is it's from John D. Clare, so the designer behind Mystic Veil and Edge of Darkness and a lot of other really big AEG games over the last few years. And the game is not, you're not sleeving cards like a lot of his other games. It's more of like a dice rolling, push your luck type of game. So you are in the Cube Cup, a race of strategy and luck to determine the Cubitos champion. Have a runner on the racetrack and then a support team, which are your dice, and you're just going to roll them and kind of move around the track. But you'll buy new dice, you'll upgrade your abilities and kind of find new ways to like power up throughout the race. It looks cute. It looks interesting. And he's done a lot of really good games. So I, I think it'll work. I don't know what's going on with the theme. It's strange, but I think the game could work. So we'll see how it goes. All right. Next one up, and you'll love this one. Rajas of the Ganges, the Dice Charmers. It's a roll and write. Eh?
Eh? Eh? All right.
Eh.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, I know. I think they're a little late to the game, actually. So Inca Jeez, and Marcus Brand, the world famous design duo behind Rajas of the Ganges, are back with a roll and write, which, okay. Roll and write version of a famous board game. These are either fine or bad, so we'll see how it goes. But yeah, in this game, same as the original, you're racing for wealth and fame and seeing when they mark, meet each other in the middle. So just instead of using a board, you're going to be marking a bunch of stuff on the sheet. I will probably buy it and let y'all know what I think.
And I will probably skip it and not know what's going on with it.
Yep. Possibly mock me for buying it. We'll see.
I certainly will.
All right. Next one up is Beyond the Sun. This is a new one from Rio Grande Games. It's from a brand new designer, Dennis K. Chan. And it's a big space worker placement game. So got some action drafting stuff, some worker placement for various things you're doing. There's tech trees, and you are going off into space and beyond the solar system. So it's got very, very familiar it's near sci-fi type of artwork in terms of like Rio Grande fonts and layout, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just kind of the same old blue and black color scheme, but it's a big box of stuff. Mechanically, it looks interesting. And I don't know. I just like this kind of game. I like the space stuff. I like tech trees in general. So I'm interested to see how this plays out.
Nice.
The Magnificent Snow. This is a expansion for The Magnificent, which I just got. So, so this is from Aporta Games. And The Magnificent came out at Essen last year. And it was like the one game I wanted to get out of Essen. And it took the longest to come here. They finally shipped it in like late July. So this expansion, I imagine, will either come next year in July or never, because that's always an option as well. There was a game a couple years ago, Windake, that had an expansion at Essen. And then I was like, oh, it was Renegade. And I was like, oh, Renegade, are you going to bring that over? Like, oh, we didn't sell enough of Windake, so we're not bringing that over. I'm like, no. How do I get my expansions?
Renegade!
Come on! So this one brings in 50 new master cards, a bunch of new camp tiles, poster cards, order cards, all that good stuff. There's new player boards. So I think it goes up to 5 players now, which boo, but you know, you can ignore that part if you want. And there's various ways to tweak your different actions. So this is a very modular type of game anyways, like what comes out and what you can do. So they're just more variability and like the new master board module that gets mixed in there. So I'm excited. I really like the Magnificent, and more content is always great.
Excellent.
All right. Next up is Gods Love Dinosaurs from Pandasaurus Games.
Okay.
Because Pandasaurus is the dinosaur company now, which
nice.
If you think about it, took them a little too long to get there, but with that. You're gonna call yourself Pandasaurus. I mean,
I know,
but they got there.
You would think.
All right. So in this one, it's kind of a goofy, silly theme. You have some basic drafting mechanics and you're laying different tiles out and trying to build up a food chain of different types of animals, predators, prey animals. You're a dinosaur lover. You know, you're God, you're building a thing. And that seems to be basically what it is. Like, you are some kind of deity. You love dinosaurs and you are building like your own little dinosaur playground just on Earth. So
kind of like a park where you play God and create dinosaurs. Where did they pull this out from?
No, that's their other game that pulls it from there. This is that, but you know, more Peter Molyneux. It's fine.
Are you talking about the new expansion that's up? Oh wait, no, that's something completely different from the original one.
They're definitely mining that idea for a lot.
Oh my god.
So this one comes out pretty soon because I've gotten a bunch of press releases about it, so I know it's coming soon. Godzilla Love Dinosaurs. It looks cute. I think my kids will like it. So I'll probably pick it up just because it seems like a good family game.
Yeah, I love dinosaurs too. So nice.
All right. Last but not least, we have Novgorod. This is a new small box game from Stefan Riesthaus, you know, famous designer of Arkwright and Gentis. And it is a game in which you are building trading offices in the Hanseatic cities to ship goods and manufacture luxury products. So, woo, sleepy theme. But it's it is Stefan Riesthaus, and it is an investment game. So you're managing your cards, but you're like trying to manage them in such a way that you can build enough trading places, improve your ships, figure out the right ratio between the money you have and getting victory points. So anytime you put him on an economic kind of manage your resource type of game, I think it's going to be good. He's designed two of my favorite games, just period. So I'm all in for anything he puts out.
Nice.
All right. And that is it. Obviously there's like 400 games on that list, so you can dig in a little bit more. But we've now covered like 40, 45 of them, so I feel like you have a pretty good head start.
Yeah, so if you'd like to check out more of the list, it's on the BGG Hotness list. But we'll be jumping back to it throughout the year to let you know what are the newest and, of course, the hottest games that are out there. So hopefully you'll be able to pick them up during the holiday season. And if not, we'll keep you up to date when those games will become available and where you'll be able to pick them up. All right, Anthony, so that's everything for this week. Until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you a seat at the table.